Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue with just a great group of friends here. WAMC's Alan Chartok, Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain, and University at Albany Journalism Professor and Investigative Reporter Rosemary Armeo. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning,
Joe.
Well, first of all, welcome back, Mike. We haven't, because of the fund drive, Mike was off for 2 weeks.
Yeah, congratulations again.
2 weeks, so. So we were very nice to have Mike back.
Yeah. Did you want to congratulate while you were at it?
We were talking. This is very, very funny. But Rosemary is you got yesterday.
I got the official word. Yes, I'm actually a tenured professor now, which of course grants me. Yes, it's a long
tenured professor and investigative journalist.
So that means you can pretty much
academic freedom. So I can now say whatever I want.
Family's
terrified.
This is going to be a great show.
What a change that's going to be that you can now say whatever you want.
Some friends have pointed that out. Yes,
this is going to be great, and.
And then what's next for you?
She's celebrating by going to Rio for a couple of weeks.
This is for the Global Investigative Journalism Conference. It's a biannual event, and I'm doing a paper there.
Excellent. So congratulations.
It has
that.
Nothing
that's
to do
exciting.
With tourism or rum drinks.
No. Not at all.
A conference in Rio. Well, congratulations, and thank you very much for
it's hard work.
You know,
someone has to do it.
Continuing to do this.
Well, now she has to get. Now she has to go through the promotional stuff. What you're assistant? You'll be assistant.
I'm associate.
Associate professor.
So I mean, I'm I'm at the age where most people are thinking of retiring from professions, and I just got tenure, like a 30-year-old. So I don't know if I really need more.
Oh, you do.
See, that's what this is. What happens?
I've got the letter already.
You get sucked into the world of academia.
You get sucked into this competition. I deal with students and I do committee work and it's important and I'm happy. Why do I need more?
Yeah, and this all of this following a brilliant career in journalism prior.
Yeah, it's sort of continuing. I still like doing that.
Yeah, it's all
the world is good. It's all chapters.
That's right.
Let's get
again,
on to.
All right, so let's talk about good old fashioned dysfunction. So President Obama on Monday made a visit to FEMA, to the Federal Emergency Management Agency. It was an unscheduled visit in his latest bid to draw attention to the effects of the government shutdown and to challenge Speaker John Boehner's claim that he does not have enough votes to pass a measure to finance the government. That is a claim that Mr. Boehner made on this week, the Sunday morning program with George Stephanopoulos. And Mr. Obama called on Mr. Boehner to vote, to put to a vote, the Senate-passed stopgap bill to fund the government. The House should hold that vote today, the president said.
Mm.
All right. So is that checkmate?
No, it's more grandstanding. And the president isn't the only one calling in to question the veracity of the speaker's assessment. From his moderates in his own party, what is it, Dent, Representative Dent from Pennsylvania, has also said, I think he may be wrong about the numbers.
You can bet there's a lot of lobbying going on behind the scenes.
Got to be.
To House,
the numbers may be
members.
A little fluid.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that any one of these guys, the Republicans, who will face a Democratic-Republican standoff in a general election, have got to be worried about this. In other words, the red state guys who are worried about looking over their shoulders at the primary, the potential primary by an even more radical Republican, that's one group. That's only 30 that we know of, 30 to 50. But the other ones, like Chris Gibson here,
Dent,
King,
any of those folks, they know these are going to be close things. Now, if I was Chris Gibson's campaign manager, and I am not, the first thing I would say right now is I am not happy with the speaker. He has to vote for him, and I'll tell you why, because the guys who are lined up after him are much worse. They're more conservative. You're going to get two guys who would be the obvious choices, who are not to any kind of moderate's liking. And when I use any kind of term like moderate with Chris Gibson, by the way, I get mail saying he's not a moderate. He's a Republican.
Yes. I saw some of that. Okay, so I've been reading about the speaker. Did you know that under the Constitution, the speaker does not necessarily even need to be a member of the House of Representatives?
No.
That is true.
I knew that.
And I think that Obama maybe ought to start recruiting somebody from outside the House to go in
to
there
go
and
become
clean
the
up.
Speaker.
And how would you get him elected?
Well, I mean, he's not doing well on getting his budget passed. Why not try something entirely different?
It's a wonderful idea.
I mean, we're talking here about.
I'm looking to try to think outside the box.
About congressmen who are worried about re-election, sure. So they're taking positions and they're posturing and they're this and that. And Boehner himself is worried about losing his leadership.
Right.
But, you know, isn't it much, much bigger than that now? I mean, isn't it? This is like major
global
stuff.
Economy. Yeah.
Yeah, we got a Pew. We have a Pew poll, mm-hmm. yeah. which shows that the country is virtually evenly split on Obamacare right. and also on whether or not Obama should be the guy to concede, which is beyond anything I can understand.
I know. It has now become like a football game, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like which side is going to win, and it's being covered like it's a contest.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, and the two sides seem to be either Congress is saying, okay, Mr. President, you're bad because you're not negotiating, and the president is saying, okay, Mr. Speaker, you're bad because you're not putting this up for a vote.
And they say it over and over and over.
What's
again.
The end game? I mean, this is a doomsday approach, and everybody's going to get destroyed by
it. I said the other day, it reminded me of Slim Pickens on the bomb going down, going, Yahoo!
But as you said, there are talks and maneuvers going on that we are not privy to. I think Chuck Schumer has indicated he's been approached to try to come up with a way that moderates and Democrats can give a way out, a face-saving measure to the Speaker.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Rosemary, and I'm sure you will because you always have.
Especially now.
Especially now. Yes, but correct me if I'm wrong. Don't you think that these guys have it's sort of a no-win situation? I mean, it just
these guys. Which guys are we talking about?
I mean, along comes this weekend.
The American people.
No, I'm talking about the polls. Along this weekend comes Boehner once again. I want to make sure I always pronounce his name correctly. Boehner. It's not spelled quite that way, but it sounds like Boehner. Yeah. So he comes along and he says, "We got." See what I did there?
Okay. Yeah, it's very subtle.
Very subtle. Yeah. Okay, but he comes along and he changes the conversation. He stops with the Obamacare, and he starts with the we have to do changes to the way in which we finance the government because we're spending too much money. Well, by the way, everybody knows that. The Democrats know it. The Republicans know it. So that's the way out.
You know, spending is down.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at what the Republicans were pushing for 2 years ago, we're kind of at that level.
Yes,
I mean, because of sequestration and other things that have happened. I mean, it's a lot has been achieved, but now they just are bent. I mean, a certain number are bent on destroying this legislation, Obamacare.
Well, no. But see, I think when Boehner moved from the Obamacare this weekend in his pronouncements to we have to change the way in which we're spending.
He's looking for an out, you think?
Yes, I do.
Right. So now it isn't about Obamacare. Give me something that will cut spending, that will
Save face for us.
Yes.
Well,
that's what has to happen.
Saving face is everything.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what has to happen. I'm sure all kinds of, you know, back room discussions are how can we let him off the hook a little bit so that we can get this thing done?
Sure.
And they're both saying that about each other.
Alan mentioned a poll a moment ago, and there is a Washington Post ABC News poll that was released last night. Disapproval of congressional Republicans' budget wrangling after a week-long shutdown has shot up to 70%. 51% of those disapproving strongly. At the same time, President Obama's approval rating has ticked up due to improved marks among moderate Democrats and independents. No group, however, earns positive marks for their handling of budget negotiations.
Nor should they.
So what does this show us? It shows us that, polls can be so deceiving because a day before we saw the Pew poll. So you say pew, and it showed that Obama's in real some real trouble here because half the country was on Obamacare. It was 42-44 or something like that.
It all depends, as we've noted here time and time again, on the way questions are worded and presented.
Sure,
but I think a poll where one side has negative ratings of 70% needs to be looked at. That's
but I think
hard
the Democrats
to,
are what 60% on that same poll. Where do the Democrats in Congress?
Let me bring it up.
And it's
while Joe's doing that,
I can tell you that
it is high, 11%.
61,
now,
I
think,
I guess.
Have any kind of appreciation for the Congress at all.
That's both of those numbers show that it's president versus Congress, not Republicans versus Democrats. I think the way.
And in the end, it's people who are trying to watch out for their own well-being. They're worried about losing re-election to the Tea Party people back home, or they're losing to the Democrat who gets runs against him. And isn't there a point where you have to just step up and be bigger than that?
No,
and do the right
not
thing?
For them.
Yeah,
that's the terrible part about this. John Kennedy, or Ted Sorensen, we know, wrote a book called Profiles in Courage. And, the profile in courage is somebody who knows that they will lose, but says this is the right thing. Those people are
Roy McDonald.
There was a guy. And there was a guy named Michaels in the legislature who supplied the vote that made abortion legal in New York State.
And he lost.
And announced on the floor he knew it would cost them his job, and it did.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue on these issues and much more. We welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll continue after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Amtrak. Fall foliage trips aboard the Adirondack from New York City to Montreal, with stops in the Hudson Valley and New York's North Country. Amtrak.com for reservations. Adams Ferryacre Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger. Fresh seafood, Hereford beef, farm fresh produce, local and imported cheeses, specialty groceries, AdamsFarms.com. Sunwood Builders, Amherst, over 20 years of green and custom home building, offering home remodeling services and energy retrofits. Working to save energy while maintaining design features, sunwood-builders.com. And Identity Eyewear, Albany. Customized eyewear fittings, European frame lines, and more. Identity Eyewear, it's what sets you apart. EYEDENTITY Eyewear.net.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Chartok, all present, and we welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us talk a little bit about the implications of what's going on. Article in the New York Times this morning about the stalemate in Washington producing nervous ripples across the world economy, across the globe, from London to Bali, as they say in the New York Times, with increasing anxiety that the United States might actually default on a portion of its government debt, setting off global financial troubles and undercut fragile economic recoveries in many countries. 5 years ago, after the financial crisis in the U.S. helped spread a deep global recession, policymakers around the world again fear collateral damage, this time with their nations becoming victims not of Wall Street's excesses, but of a political system in Washington that to many foreign eyes no longer seems to be able to function efficiently.
Yeah, a columnist for Le Monde, the French newspaper, compared Washington to the Italian political system. What does that say?
Yeah. We're so proud, and we really can't defend ourselves, can we?
You know, I don't buy it. I've talked already about how I think a whole lot of this is Chicken Little. The U.S. does not have to default on its payments, and it can be averted. This is politics, not a real crisis, a failure as we had in 2008. This is politics.
What about perception?
The perception is bad, but what are they going to do? There's no other. It's not like, oh, we're going to now rely on what? It's
well,
the United States
Rosemary,
or nothing.
But Rosemary, I think the downside of this is that, if, as Joe says, perception is king. And people start to behave economically badly, that this could start up another round of problems internationally.
I can't see it. It's in no one's interest to do that. And there's also steps, and law professors and legal scholars are beginning to debate this in earnest,
right,
that the president can take. The Constitution, in the eyes of
some, a lot of options.
Clearly says that Congress cannot renege on debts. It's the 14th Amendment.
Right. The president can pretty much circumvent Congress in going to war.
Right.
He can circumvent Congress in raising the debt ceiling.
I think he said he doesn't want to do it.
Well, he doesn't want to do because
Rosemary, but if he says he wants to do it, he won't
then
do
people
it.
Won't even talk about it.
Yeah. Because what happens is that takes the pressure off Congress.
Right. But that's different between what he's saying right now and what he actually ultimately can and might do.
But are we willing to take the chance? I guess that's Joe's question. Are we willing to take the chance by allowing this thing to fall? And then, you know, people around other governments who rely on the U.S. dollar are going to be in a lot of trouble, I think.
Okay. Can I ask a question, sure, then, and then I'll back out and let you smart guys answer?
Let's avoid that kind of thing.
I'm sorry. I'm not being impertinent, but this is what I'm really thinking. The last time that we had the whole debt ceiling debate and problem, the whole rating system
Standard
of the government,
and Poor's,
Standard and Poor, and yeah. whatever, we it went down. We were degraded. What was the consequence of that to the United States? So why is it so bad? Why should I be so afraid of this?
Well, I think one of the problems here, I think you put your finger on it, albeit maybe even inadvertently, I think a lot of people are not taking this seriously.
Well,
I think we're all sort
bingo.
Of
there's
yeah,
another
sort
school
of sitting
of thought
nights back, yeah.
That we're that what we're you know why we're fighting over here the European the euro and the European Union will gain greater prominence and while Obama
mess,
is not
Mike.
You know Indonesia while Obama's in missing the Indonesia the Asian summit, China gets to have a more prominent role. So I mean, it already could be eroding our prominence and the prominence of the dollar bill. I know that the euros and the European Union is in trouble, but they've been in trouble for a while and they've kept things going.
But if everyone across the board, if their economic positioning is fragile, this isn't going to help anybody, is it?
No, and I've been reading a lot about post World War II history. So interesting because we set up this competitive thing between us and the euro, but we made it.
Yeah.
I mean, we built it so that it would be what it is today. I don't know. There's I just wonder. I'm sorry for being cynical, but I just wonder whether or not this is there's another game going on that we don't know about.
Oh, that's interesting. Such as. Yeah.
Well, that there has to be an equilibrium. We have to keep the European markets alive and prosperous as trading partners and everything else. And it isn't as if it's the dollar versus the euro. Yesterday, there was a huge contract awarded to Airbus, to the Europeans.
I have about 30 seconds before I have to go break.
No, okay. But that's my thesis. My thesis is there's a lot going on. One's for public consumption. The other is the way it really is.
We're going to come back and continue our conversation. We welcome your comments, as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also join us on Facebook. You can also go on Twitter at WAMC Roundtable. We'd love to hear from you. Again, WAMC.org. We'll continue our conversation after this short break. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Mike Spain is here from the Albany Times Union. Rosemary Armeo is here. I hear she's a tenured professor at the University at Albany. And our good friend, of course. And Alan Chartok is with us as well. Good morning, all, and welcome back. We are talking about a myriad of issues. And Mike, you have several casino-related stories, so I'm hoping you can just do a rundown and sort of give us a state of casino report as it stands right now.
Well, as you know, there's a vote on the ballot on November 5th. New Yorkers will decide whether to approve a constitutional amendment that will allow Las Vegas-style casinos in four locations in upstate New York. And now, as we are about a month away, you're beginning to see both sides really step forward in promoting casino gambling and promoting the ills of casino gambling in order to influence the voters. And I'd say the Cuomo administration has stepped forward and is starting their campaign. Yesterday, the budget division of the Cuomo administration put out details of what local communities might expect if the voters approve the amendment and if a casino is located in your community. Your city or town and your county will split $11.5 million. And in Saratoga Springs, they're watching that one because they're hoping to be the site of a casino. And right now they have a video lottery terminal Racino, or casino as they call it, at the raceway. And that brings about $1.8 million a year, which is down from what it originally did.
Mike, wasn't there also, that's my best professional stutter.
Yes.
Mike,
what?
Well, you'll get a letter now as well as me. Yeah. Okay, so my question is, wasn't there a piece in your wonderful paper yesterday that I read that Cuomo had gotten a lot of money from the pro-gambling people into his campaign account?
That's exactly right. That's a lot of people have made money. The good government group Common Cause tallied up what lawmakers are receiving in campaign contributions. They say it's up to $3.2 million, and the political action committees that are supporting the gambling constitutional amendment are ponying up. The Republican Senator John Bonacek has gotten nearly $85,000. Others have gotten similar amounts. And
Bonacek, because it would probably one of
he's
those
in the
would
Catskills.
Be
he
in
represents
his
the Catskills. Right. His district would be a target for one of these.
I think we voters should get into the spirit of this and start demanding a certain fee for a yes vote. They need our approval.
I think they would pay it.
I'll take a hundred. Yeah, $150.
It would come as a couple of poker chips or a couple of
votes for sale.
What we call walking around money. Vote. Here's $5.
I got gambling.
It'd be a debit card usable in any of the four casino sites in upstate New York.
That's a pretty good kind of recruiting.
Of course, this comes after a weekend of stories that we had by James Odato, who seems to be the guru on casino gambling and has watched it for years. He's our reporter who told about the addiction problems and profiled a few people who have gambling addiction. Did you know that if you're addicted to gambling, you can go to a casino in New York or one of these racinos, and you can have yourself declared off limits? In other words, you give them their picture, you sign a bunch of forms, and if they see you come in to gamble, they have to throw you out.
It's like a self-committing.
Right, it is.
But of course, as we know from small things like prohibition, that addicted gamblers will find a way to gamble.
That was the point. This guy who Jim interviewed, who goes to the Racino up in Saratoga Springs, was sneaking back in, putting on a baseball cap and covering himself up because he has a lot of tattoos.
Well, they can go to Louise Bar and place a bet.
Oh, yes.
I think there's lots of reasons to vote against this, but I'm not sure that protecting people addicted to gambling is a good reason to make policy or make decisions.
Well, I think the bigger argument, that's a social issue.
It is,
but I think the bigger argument that the opponents would make is that these are not going to bring in people from all over the country to spend their big dollars. You know, who's going to go to a gambling a casino in the Finger Lakes of New York State?
It's not a mecca like Vegas.
Other than people who live around the Finger Lakes of New York State. And generally, the people who go to the casinos are not rich people. They're very much middle-class people.
Yeah, like the people who pay the lottery, for example.
Yeah, but I mean, this allows them to pay a whole lot more. So rather than, shifting the burden. Well, it does. Some would argue this shifts the burden from wealthier New Yorkers to more middle-class New Yorkers and people who are poor.
Well, don't
you think
isn't
that the governor's plan?
This is what critics are saying. And there's studies to show that women are disproportionate in their addiction to gambling and to using slots. And then there's the story about how these slot machines are programmed to sort of understand you and figure out who you are and know your profile. And every time you use your debit card, they know it's you no matter what machine you're on. And then they start to give you a little bit and take back more, give you a little bit just to keep you there. And they figure out what you're...
Is that true? Because that really would be horrible.
Oh, no. I think it's verifiable.
Oh, sure. That's
really?
That's what it is.
Right, you mean that what you're telling me is that... Is the slot machines are loaded?
It's like they have cookies, the way the internet has cookies.
Yeah. I mean, they will determine a new user, and they will get you, you know,
addicted.
The first couple rounds, and they, yeah. I mean, that's all been proven, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
that there is a system to it, and it depends on how much you play.
Shouldn't that be illegal?
No, it's all random. Yeah, I don't know. I
think it's like shopping. I think
it's
like
gaming. It's entertainment. It's not gambling. It's gaming.
This all is like shopping centers, though. We built so many of them. They began competing with each other and shutting down. How many casinos does the United States need?
Well, the governor's budget division has projected that four new upstate casinos will generate $430 million a year in state revenue, and that would be allocated to education and local governments. And
but
that
where does
is
that
important.
Come from?
Well, it comes from the middle class of those communities, really. I mean, that's what the
But you wonder what effect of where
saying.
That money is
okay,
being
let me,
shifted
let me,
from.
Let me play the devil's advocate for just a moment. What about, you know, something like a hotel like Grossinger's or the old Grossinger's or Neverly or one of those places? And we know that Ulster County is a depressed, that part of Ulster County is a depressed area.
And Sullivan County.
Yeah. Why not? I mean, why not, you know, give them another chance to, you know, to flourish? And, I mean, I think that's what Andrews, I take liberty there, Governor Cuomo's, you know, thing is, to sort of bring some economic wealth to those regions.
You know, perhaps that is the compelling argument that areas that are economically depressed should be where you locate the casinos. Instead of locating it in Saratoga Springs, maybe they should locate the one for the upstate region in Montgomery County.
I'm not so sure, by the way, if you had a plebiscite in, like they just did, what was it, West Hartford show? They voted it down. West Springfield, maybe it was.
In Massachusetts.
Yeah, Massachusetts, because if you bring one of those things, if you brought it to Great Barrington, where I live, it would go down so fast, your eyes would blink. But if you brought it to a place like Springfield, which really needs the help, or Poughkeepsie, which we just had a story on and all the crime and everything, you might get a different result.
Well, I mean, this is all, to me, it's a much different argument of saying when the Racino came to Saratoga,
right.
You already had, first of all, you had a major race course across the street.
Exactly.
You already had
a racetrack, and you had harness racing.
You already had a harness racing.
You had betting going on.
And they were in trouble, and they said, well, this is a way to save that and to bring. And that was an easier sell, it seems to me, than this is.
That's a good point.
Of bringing brand new places into areas that don't have that built-in audience already.
Well, I think that there's a case to be made. I think there's a case. I think there's
Alan just had a thought. That's the signal for that.
There's some photographers coming to take my picture. yeah, right. So but I think there's a case to be made for economic development in really poor places, and I suspect that the people will go for the job. Potential job opportunities, even though there's a lot, and I'm sure Mike will tell us about this. You know, they always say more jobs, but then they bring people in from the outside for those jobs.
Well, I mean, the opponents will argue that it's a net loss for the community. A lot of small shops that are not, that are, you know, restaurants and shops that are outside of the immediate casino area will just go out of business.
Certainly,
people
are
gaming. They're not eating and buying.
Certainly,
right. They're not.
No, they're eating in the complex.
Right. And you know the way this culture is that you don't see clocks and you don't see windows. You don't know whether it's
right.
Day
once
or
you're
night.
In the cave, you're in the cave.
Right.
Yeah, I was actually in one once, and I was depressed. From the moment I walked in, it was in an Indian casino.
I was in one once.
I was in one once. And
veritable expert on casino gambling.
No, I just want you to know my reaction. My reaction was to be depressed.
Oh, wow.
Sit
down at the machine. It'll make you happy for a little while.
Well, see, I don't know.
That's not all it'll make you happy.
You know that you're new, and they'll start giving you a little money back.
You know, I actually agree with Alan, though. I think when you with time and coming in as sort of an outsider to that environment, sitting down and spending any given time is rather depressing.
Oh my.
There's stories about women who will sit at the casino for sit at the slot machine for 25 hours because they don't want to lose the momentum that they've established, and they'll wear adult
diapers.
That would be
I. That would
truly.
Be I. Yes. Yeah.
And, and that's gold diapers.
Adult diapers.
Adult.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Adult
so they don't
diapers,
have to leave.
Yeah. Yes. I mean,
well,
it's,
I've been hit by people like where you start to sit down and that's my machine. Yeah. Okay.
And yet, you know, the gambling industry will argue that for most people, it's entertainment.
Sure.
It's dropping a few bucks. You go with a bunch of friends.
You
have a lot of fun.
You have some fun.
Somebody makes a little money. The rest of you lose. And he buys the drinks and you go home and you have fun.
But what I heard today, which is that the machines, when you say adult entertainment, that the machines know who you are and do this, that's very depressing. I mean, I had no idea. I thought they had to be honest by law, but they don't.
Well, I mean, there are a certain percentage of people that do win. I don't know what the percentage is.
No, but that they determine who those people are. That's what.
I don't know that it's determined as much as I mean. You put in a card.
Yeah. Yeah.
An often like a frequent because now most of it is.
Because it isn't fun. Like you put in a coin. Or
right,
a
and
bill
you hear it. You'd hear it hit. That doesn't do that anymore. So it's vouchers, and you're putting in.
It's kind of like banking.
A voucher, and then you have the,
like an ATM.
Yeah,
that's
banks.
Right.
Except
not as much
action.
Comes out. Right. And they make it very easy, and you can slide your card and all of that stuff. And they have that the little hook that goes to your pocket, and then you have the card, the credit card that goes in, and that's your point card.
This is a man of experience.
No, but you know, you've been there, right?
Right.
So you go, you put the card in, and then all of those go into points, and then you earn those points for your meals and your shows and your upgrades and all that stuff, depending on the casino, depending on the situation. But all of that is it seems to me those electronic gaming situations are very different from. Say blackjack or roulette, which is truly a game of chance,
and there still is, and there's people that you know play poker in casinos, you know, and bring that trade to the or that recreational activity to casinos.
Let's take a break. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about other interesting stories. We welcome your comments as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this.
Support for WAMC comes from MKC Kitchen and Bath Center, Troy, offering a range of cabinetry including showplace, wood products, countertops, design services, and showroom. MKCKitchens.com. Miss Hall School, a girls' boarding and day school in the Berkshires, grades 9 through 12, open houses October 14th and November 11th, campus tours, meet and greet, MissHalls.org. And Hudson Valley Foot Associates, podiatric physicians and surgeons treating foot problems with offices in Ulster, Dutchess, Columbia, Orange, and Delaware counties. HVFA.com.
Welcome back to the roundtable. We'll have about 10 minutes left and a lot of really good topics to discuss. We'll try to get to as many as we can in our lightning round.
This is a lightning round. Exactly.
Our lightning round.
Talk as fast as you can.
So let's talk about the governor of the state of California, Jerry Brown, vetoing a law allowing. This is a fascinating story. Alan sent this out last night about vetoing a law allowing permanent residents, non-citizens, to sit under juries. In the state of California.
I'm going to get into trouble for this, but I agree with him. You know, I think that there is something to be said for what a citizen is supposed to do, and one of them is jury duty, and I think it makes a certain amount of sense. I love driver's licenses for those people which he just approved and some of the others. But I think in the case of jury duty, I think Brown was right. And let's remember, this is the guy who was once called Mayor Moonbeam, who is one of the outstanding sort of liberal forces in America. So I think you have to give him a buy on this one.
I think this is a story about leadership, and that's why I'm fascinated by it. You have the federal government, which has done very little on immigration, even in the face of urgent need and requirement for at least one party to pay attention. They've done little. And so the states are beginning to lead now. We saw this with gay marriage, where the federal government did not act, and states one by one began acting. California has very proudly said, we're going to show you what you should be doing with immigration.
One by one, they've been giving more rights to
immigrants. Exactly. And they have been, as Alan pointed out, driver's license was a big one. There are several other that are important that maybe, Mike, you can tell us about.
Yeah, I mean, the Trust Act, they call it. Unless immigrants have committed serious crimes, they can't be detained.
Can't be turned over to the feds. It's up to the state to decide who they're going to turn over. But in this case, he decided that he did not want to get too far ahead of things.
Well, he might have feared a constitutional fight. Somebody probably would have brought a lawsuit, a defense attorney who didn't have the trial goes, well, that guy wasn't a citizen. It wasn't a lawfully impaneled jury. Therefore, my client needs a new trial because I don't like the outcome of it.
But I like what Rosemary said.
He may also, just add, also just have wanted the debate. As you can see, he's succeeded, and we're talking about it.
He's got it, right.
There are other states where this will be debated.
I thought it was a gutsy move.
Well, when Elliot Spitzer, the governor of New York back in 2007, tried to give licenses to undocumented aliens, non-citizens, he had a storm of controversy that was, he was basically backed off it. I mean, it was New York wasn't ready for it. California seems much more ready. They recognized the reality.
His legislature gave it to him. It wasn't like this was his idea that he is pushing. I find that really fascinating, that there's an appetite for it. And it does bring in some questions about what it means to be a citizen or to live in a country where you're not a citizen, but you participate almost as if you were.
His quote, jury service like voting is quintessentially a prerogative and responsibility of citizenship. This bill would permit lawful permanent residents who are not citizens to serve on a jury. I don't think that's right.
Yeah, I mean, and then the other side is you have plenty of people in that status who are brought before the system. They're brought into the system as suspects. And who is trying them, not their peers?
Again, a fascinating story. The other story I wanted to get to before we call it a day here on the panel and this is one of those stories that's been festering. Well, it's been festering forever, and it's been something that I've wanted to bring up for a while, and it's reached a new level, and that is the naming of the or the possible renaming of the Washington Redskins. This to me is a fascinating story because it has been going around for so long, and the team has just said, you know what, we're not going to do it. We're not going to do it. And now they're having talks, and it keeps on becoming an issue. And I'm just curious as to, doesn't it seem to all of you that at some point they're going to have to change it?
They should change it. What about the New York Jews or the
morning. What if they were Italian? Yeah,
their argument is that Redskins is not a derogatory term.
Well,
but whose call is it for them to
make?
Well,
of course it is. We all watched Six Gun Playhouse. We know about that.
I lived in Cleveland.
We've all watched Six Gun Playhouse.
If we're 72 years old.
I lived in Cleveland for a while, where we have, of course, the Cleveland Indians. I have a lot of paraphernalia from them. And when I went on a trip earlier this year, I needed a windbreaker, so I pulled something out of my closet. And there I am in Argentina with this blue blazer with Chief Wahoo on my chest. You know the mascot, the logo of the Indians.
A very animated Native American.
Wahoo. Yeah, so Indians may not be in dispute, but Chief Wahoo is pretty much racist symbol. And I never really thought about it until that day. And then it's like, this is not right. I would not wear symbols like this.
No, they're going to have to change. You're right, Joe. Sooner or later, they have to change.
I mean, even the President of the United States said
they ought to think about it.
And why not? We move teams out of their hometowns, and that's okay. Rich guys want to move to get a better deal in another city, and that's all right to wreck the team
But
that
that's not blatantly. That's not blatantly
but
racist.
Colleges have led the way. Lots of colleges have dropped these references. I mean, Siena College
and high
used to be the Indians.
That's right. Changed it to the Saints.
And now it's the Saints, and they have a mascot of a big dog instead of a Native American running around on the court to rev up the crowd. I mean, it, you know, people have adapted. I mean, you know, the Red Storm, wasn't that the Redmen, you know, of St. John's?
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that was my point about teams moving out. If you can, if the fans can deal with they're moving from one city where which was their home to another, then why would a name change be so disruptive?
So, but you guys think that Indians itself, because I need some education on this, I think it's, it can almost be positive, but you think that even that is negative?
You're from Cleveland. Was it objected to in Cleveland?
Oh, no. Clevelanders loved it.
Did Native Americans?
I don't even know if they... I mean,
I don't remember
it
being a debate there.
Yeah. But I'm sure it will be.
It should be.
And it should be. Right. The story here, of course, is that the NFL is going to meet with this Indian tribe that is pushing for the Redskins to drop the team's name. And league owners are meeting this week, and they want to have that meeting. So the question will be something that is discussed. But again, whether there will actually anything will be done. A poll was done. 4 in 5 AP poll did this. 4 in 5 Americans don't think the team should change its name. It's been around for a long time. Leave
change
it the way it is.
Change is hard. You know, change is hard. I like some of the suggested names. The Washington Americans. That's not bad.
No.
How about would anybody object if it was the Washington Republicans?
Probably the Democrats would. I'm not sure. an interesting story, and ultimately, I was trying to find an actual date going back to when the term came into
what term?
When Redskins became.
Pejorative?
When it became part of the team.
We did a terrible thing in America with our American Indian population, and historians have to own up to it, and that's all there is to it.
But going to Rosemary's point earlier, and then we're out of time, but we have the Kansas City Chiefs, we have the Chicago Blackhawks, we have the Cleveland Indians, and the Atlanta Braves with the tomahawk chop. So
I think Redskins is a derogatory term.
Yeah.
Okay, and then what about... And then
Braves,
what about the other
Braves
terms? What about the Burb? Right, Braves or the Chiefs? Or
especially, I think those are almost, I don't know. I mean, you guys know much more about this than I do, but it seems it's almost positive. You know, I mean, I wouldn't mind being the Braves. I wouldn't mind, but I would be mind being known by the color of my skin.
Mm-hmm. We'll leave it there for this morning. Thank you all very much for joining us. And Rosemary and Mike, you'll be back tomorrow. We'll see you then.
Great.
Again, roundtable at WAMC.org. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.